still listed as a Class 1 narcotic by the Single Convention Treaty of 1961, cannabis has been made legal, or it's semi-legal, I guess, in states across the land. And the rush is on to turn the green plant into green money. That prospect leads us to ask, is it time to get down to cannabis?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, thank you, Will Strickland, and hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,112th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or perhaps you're listening, tuned in way down there in Fremantle, as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason.
It's a pleasure.
Now, have you ever considered getting into the cannabis business? You don't have to admit. You could just say, I thought about it.
Yeah, I did think about it.
And what would you have done in the cannabis business?
I think I like the aspect of cultivation, personally.
Being a farmer.
Yeah.
Well, fair enough, folks. Yeah, all but nine of the world's nations signed the Single Convention Treaty of 1961, establishing the cannabis plant and its derivatives as a Class 1 narcotic. But who cares? Certainly some states in the United States do not care, as they have made cannabis illegal, or at least semi-legal. And since very few seem to care about a funky old treaty signed in 1961, entrepreneurs across the land are getting down to the cannabis of turning the green plant into green money. And so we ask, is it time to get down to cannabis? Well, here to help us dig for an answer, we're bringing back Les Israelo, who is an industry observer, and he's helped us put together a number of shows, bringing in leading luminaries from across the land. Today, you've got some great ones, right, Les?
Exactly.
Now, kind of give us a survey of who are you bringing to it.
We have Chris Levy, and I was at an event in April put on by the company that he works for at the Hayes Mansion in San Jose, and I was so impressed of what they did. So Chris will be on the show, and he's a co-chairman and partner of MedMen, leading cannabis management and investment firm. He oversees MedMen's investment strategy. Chris has had senior roles at Morgan Stanley, Oppenheimer Funds, and BlackRock, and oversaw BlackRock's $115 billion fundamental equities and their global operating committee. He has been recognized at Barron's top 100 fund manager, and he's been quoted in the Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, CNBC, and Bloomberg News.
That he's joining us would indicate that there's some money being in.
Yeah, exactly.
There's money on it. Good. And should we pick him up right now? Start
exactly.
With him? All right. Chris, welcome to the Food Chain Radio program. So happy to have you aboard.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good, good. MedMen. Tell us a little bit about MedMen.
So MedMen is a dual organization. We have a management company that works similar to Harrah's Casinos in the gambling business, where we will manage cultivation, processing, and retail assets on the behalf of owners of those assets.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a private equity fund business where we have private equity funds that also invest in assets in cultivation, processing, and retail. And then our management company will run those assets.
Wow. So people can buy their own cannabis farm and not even have to run it.
That's right.
Now, you come from what sounds to be a very high-powered financial background. How on earth does money work in an industry that's almost legal, but not quite?
Well, there's two parts to that. One part is the banking end of things. And if we were doing this interview 3 years ago, we'd be talking about pictures of marijuana entrepreneurs standing in front of a pile of cash because they had trouble banking.
Right.
That's really become, thankfully, that has become yesterday's story, finally.
Well, how did it not be? I mean, what is the difference? Because I just talked with somebody just the other day who runs a business training for a local college, and she says, though she would love to get involved in advising people in the cannabis industry, she can't because it's a federally funded program, and that's that. So how do entrepreneurs get beyond the cash thing then?
Sure. So there's certainly some types of organizations where this is still an issue. However, in 2014, the Treasury Department issued guidelines for banking in this industry. Since then, we now have over 300 financial institutions in our country that do cannabis banking.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this
is certainly some institutions that cannot bank, but there's enough that can to make it feasible for entrepreneurs.
You know, just in looking at the industry in the last year, what changes have you seen that in the industry that would indicate that, I don't know, there's nothing that could stop it?
Sure. Well, I think the watershed event in the past year were the elections in this past November, where we had a number of states we had legalization on the ballot in a number of states, and we had states like Florida turn to legalize medical cannabis, and then we had states like Nevada and California legalize cannabis for adult use. So that election was really a watershed event when you look at just the sheer number of states and the number of people who reside in those states where there was further movement towards legalization.
And then, and yet, the other side of the election is that President Trump was elected, and he's not so certain, he doesn't seem to be so gung-ho on the industry itself. Am I wrong?
I think we have to separate Trump from the Attorney General on that. Trump is on record being very much in favor of medical cannabis, and for good reason. 94% of the American people are in favor of medical cannabis. And Trump has also said that this is a state right issue, which is also a politically astute move because 71% of Americans believe this is a state right issue.
And is Attorney General?
Well, the Attorney General is just one person. He reports to the president. And when I think about legal risk for any investment, I try to think about two things. Where is public opinion and where is the money? We talked about public opinion. We have 60% of the American people are in favor of full legalization. The money side, though, is equally compelling. If you look at your state, for instance, in California, by the year 2020, estimated tax revenues from cannabis are expected to be $1 billion.
Wow. That's money.
It's money, and it's very hard. And you and I both know, have been around long enough to know, that that money is going to get spent three or four times before it ever shows up.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a very difficult thing politically to take that money away.
Well, working with the Wall Street folks, as you have and do, how are they reacting to this emerging industry?
So you're starting, I think you have to separate, when we say a firm, into two different groups. You have the investment people at many of these institutional firms, and then you also have functions like the general counsel and the public relations firms, et cetera. And the investment people are basically there. They have figured out that there's tremendous growth in this industry, that a number of states have oligopolistic regulatory structures, which means, it's not overly competitive, so you can get good margins. And they've also figured out that many of the assets in this industry are still undervalued. On the other hand, the PR departments at these firms might be a little more cautious about that. The compliance department at these firms may be concerned about the federal prohibition that we still have. Mm-hmm. And so traditional pools of capital have been on the sidelines to date, but what's interesting is we're actually now having our second and third meetings with a number of players on that side. So I think inevitably, the tire kicking that's taking place in the institutional world will translate into investment.
You brought up a real interesting point in that some states have very good or oligarchic rules and regulations that will guarantee good margins. I translate that as they have rules that prohibit a lot of people from participating. Otherwise, everybody would be growing their own pot and there would be no market for it. Is that kind of what you were saying?
That's right. I mean, we call these privileged licenses. There's in a number of these states, there's only so many that are available. And then even beyond the state level, if you zoom in further to townships and counties, there's even more restrictions around zoning and not in my backyard type attitudes. And all of those things, you know, from a business perspective, are great for firms like ours because, you know, it keeps the competitive environment
right.
reasonable, but not to the point where it's unhealthy.
Did you hear that, all you mom-pa pot farmers out there? Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, Les Israelo, Chris Levy, and you. We will be right back to pursue this conversation with Chris, who is conversant about the money in the business, and if it without the money, no business. So do stay tuned. We will be right back. Michael Olson, Food Chain Radio Program. What do you think out there? Do you think it's time to get down to cannabis business? Right back.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro farm it. You can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it. Metro farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it. Metro farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it. Metro farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it. Metro farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy. You can do it. Metro Farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy. You can do it. Metro Farm it. And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Hey, welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Les Israelo. Today we're talking about the new emerging cannabis industry. I guess it's emerging after being in slumber for quite a while, since like 1937. Just coming back, and people are going, it's almost legal, so we should get down to cannabis. What do you think it's time to get down to cannabis? That is the subject on the line today. Right now we're talking with Chris Levy, who is with MedMen, one of the founders and CEOs of the organization MedMen, and their motto is no business that succeeds without the right combination of expertise and capital. And capital is what we're talking about. Chris, how do you evaluate a prospective marijuana operation as an investment?
So in our case, because we are typically managing these assets ourselves, we have an advantage because we already know what the operating team is going to look like. It's our management company. So when we're evaluating an investment, what we're really interested in is this in a high demand area? And then we also want to evaluate the regulatory framework, both at the local and the state level, for that investment.
And I would suspect there's a lot of regulatory framework with which to become accustomed, right?
Oh, yes. Yep. Both at the township level and at the state level.
Now, one quick last question. What is the dumbest thing you see people investing in? Which would probably be what I would invest in. So what I should not invest in.
Yeah, I would say, you know, common pitfalls. Because we talked to a number of investors who have tried things in the industry before they find us. And so we hear a lot of stories. And obviously there's some very good stories we hear, but there are some themes I hear in some of the pitfalls. One pitfall is for people who invest in areas that are overly saturated. So in Colorado, for instance, there are more dispensaries than there are Starbucks. You know, thinking about states like, thinking about those kinds of states and asking yourself, is this market oversaturated? That's a big one. The second one is, and especially because I think we have, you know, some of this is new for investors, but really looking through the deal terms carefully before they invest.
Mm-hmm.
We just hear a number of stories where things look good on the surface. They might not read those deal docs as carefully as they should. And oftentimes there can be things deep on page 32, section, you know, M, and they didn't read that carefully, and those things can come back to haunt them. So if you're not used, if your viewers are not used to reading deal docs, then definitely hire a lawyer to review them and translate it into English.
Which is pretty much true with any kind of investment, right?
Yes, it is.
Good.
Absolutely.
Well, I understand you're on the road. You're going to do dog and pony shows across the United States selling deals to people?
We are in the process. Well, we have launched our second private equity fund.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have been out talking to investors and prospective investors about that.
And where, what neck of the woods are you in? Or can people go to MedMen and find out?
Yeah, so we have a website. Very easy to reach us there. And that's probably the best way to reach out.
Good to go. MedMen. Stephen Levy, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Have a good morning.
You bet. Wow. There it is. What do you think, Les? Big money?
It is big money, and it it's Chris.
Chris Levy. Okay.
No biggie.
Well, you know, you have so many guests for me here. I was like, wow. Chris Levy.
He was fantastic. But we have Steve Goldner on the line.
There you go. There's the connection.
All right.
Now tell us about Steve.
Well, Steve and I met at an event a couple years ago up in San Francisco, and he's a chemist and a lawyer that has a pharmaceutical company out of Michigan. And Steve is an inventor of a couple of different products that he will tell us about back in the late 60s and 70s. And he has now developed a product, a pharmaceutical cannabis product, that I think is going to be cutting edge. That's going to make a big difference. So why don't we bring Steve on?
Well, good. He's there. Steve, are you there?
Yeah, good morning, Michael and Les. Thanks so much for letting me come on today.
Well, it's a pleasure. You're in Philadelphia there today, getting ready to take the kid out to the campgrounds, right?
Well, actually, that must be somebody else. I'm here in Michigan.
wrong person.
And that's quite all right.
I'd love
to be in Philadelphia. It's rainy and drizzly here in Michigan.
Well,
today.
Good. Then you can stay out of the campgrounds. You know, right. what caught me about caught my attention about you is the fact that you're a toxicologist and an attorney, and that's an interesting blend of professions.
Well, thank you very much. Somebody once described me as a unicorn because you don't come across unicorns all that often. But yeah. It was, I started out as a scientist and developed a couple of inventions that allowed me to bring something useful to people.
Well, how did you go use these two talents of being a toxicologist and an attorney to end up in the cannabis industry?
Well, starting out as a forensic toxicologist, I really invented the laboratory methods to detect LSD, marijuana, cocaine, etc., all of those back at the 60s.
Wow.
And then I formulated a drug that's called methadone and got it approved at FDA and ran that business for a couple of years. So that got me interested in bringing science to people who had problems with drugs. And then after I sold my businesses off, I was able to go to law school and became a specialist in FDA law. And over the last 35 years, I've combined science with law in order to bring lots of new products to people in different ways.
You know, you brought up a very interesting thing about the pain-relieving qualities of cannabis that are really just coming to the fore as we speak. Mostly, you know, through the years since Prohibition, I guess, Prohibition effectively restricted the use of cannabis to an intoxicant. And yet somehow people have been figuring out that it's an excellent pain reliever, and that's really what kind of sounds like what you've been focusing on. Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly it. And honestly, that's what really goes to the core of this. I got interested really in cannabis probably 30 odd years ago. A friend of mine, John, he'd gone off and served our country in Vietnam and come back a war hero, but he was in such pain. Now we call it PTSD. And I watched him night after night either self-medicate with booze or he'd get pills from the VA, and he was never able to lead a normal life. But I saw when he was able to get marijuana, it was illegal, but you know, everyone knows you can. John was not in pain. He could smile and relax. And what really moved me along was that he asked me to make a medication that could help him and all these other vets who were in emotional pain or psychological or physical pain. I couldn't do it because marijuana was illegal, but now I'm able to source good, honest supply of it and make products that really help people who are in pain.
And wow.
So that's actually what we're all about here.
So that really is a big deal, because pain is a great motivator in the world. If you're in pain, you don't sleep. If you don't sleep, you kind of go crazy. So, yes, reducing the pain with cannabis. That's where we're going. When we come back, we're going to ask our guest, Stephen Goldner of the Regulatory Affairs Associates. We're going to ask him, what is it in cannabis that relieves pain? Do stay tuned.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. Michael Olson here with Les Israelo. Today we're talking about the cannabis industry that's emerging from the darkness of prohibition. And you know, when we made cannabis illegal way back there in 1937, we in fact forced its use to be restricted only to those who had used it as an intoxicant. Couldn't make a medicine out of it, couldn't make rope out of it, but could just use it to get loaded, and that's what happened. Now it's emerging from that in that darkness of prohibition, and people are looking at this plant with all kinds of different ways of seeing opportunity there. And perhaps the greatest opportunity of all is the opportunity to rid ourselves of pain. And that prospect would make everybody happy. That is what Stephen Goldner of Regulatory Affairs Associates is doing up there in Michigan, where it's raining. And we're happy to have him here. One of the questions I wanted to ask him is that he makes a product called Pure Greens. It's a pill that dissolves, and you can formulate it for to do different kinds of things. And so what kinds of things can you address with Pure Greens, Stephen?
Well, I'm really glad you asked me that, Michael and Les. These pills are not to get loaded. That's not what this is about. People experience pain in many, many ways. They can't sleep, or they have PTSD. And so there are half a dozen different kinds of problems, just pain relief, and to be a sleep aid, to allow people to go to sleep, to relieve anxiety. That's almost half the population of the United States feels one of those terrible situations almost daily. And so we've been able to extract the CBD and CBG and CBN. These are all alphabet letter chemicals. But what's really going on here within people is when we take in food and break it down within our bodies, we have metabolic pathways. And a lot of people know that there are these CBD or CBG pathways through the body. Well, there's actually about half a dozen, and it allows us to specifically target pain relief or anxiety reduction or sleeplessness and make reliable, consistent, fast-acting tablets to take care of medical problems that we could never do when the drug was illegal.
And this is really amazing stuff, because you can take these various cannabinoids and adjust them for different kinds of almost like the control panel here on a radio station. You have all of these levers that you can put this sound up and that sound down, and that's what you can do with these cannabinoids, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And I worked at a radio station when I was in college, and so I know what your control panel looks like. And so we're able to specifically formulate micro doses and mini doses of dozens of these pure ingredients so that people can reliably know what they're going to get. And it's sort of like walking down the aisle at a drugstore. When a person wants sunscreen, you know you want SPF 35 or 45 or 25. You don't want to worry about the ingredients that are in there. So we've formulated it that way so that it's simple for people to buy something, it's color-coded, and they know what they're getting over and over again.
Wow. Now, that it's not an intoxicant, is it illegal?
Well, within states, for example, in California and many other states now, medical marijuana is perfectly legal as long as a person has a card or appropriate buy it. Recreational marijuana is in certain states and coming to California. So that's perfectly legal also. So soon these tablets are going to be available at a dispensary near you, folks. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Stephen. What fun. And thank you for relieving pain. I mean, what a great service to humanity, right? Wow.
Well, thank you.
All right.
I started out working on methadone, and now we have a safer alternative.
Well, it certainly sounds like it. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's our pleasure.
All right. Good. Onward and upward. Well, this is, so to speak, right?
Absolutely.
Who do we have next?
We have our friend down in Salinas, Gavin Kogan. Mm-hmm. And Gavin is one of California's earliest cannabis business attorneys. He's been involved with multiple products, Reaper, Indus Holding Company, which gave us Alta Brands, low dosage of edible brands of product, and brought Dixie Exler to California, which is a major Colorado company. He co-founded Grupo Flor, which is a loose network of companies, and Gavin is a member of the California State Bar Association and lives in Monterey.
Welcome aboard, Gavin. Happy to have you on the Food Chain Radio program.
Pleased to be a part. Thank you.
Now, Salinas, California, for those of us listening elsewhere in the country, is kind of like at a very hotbed of cannabis cultivation here in California, is it not?
Yes, it is.
And the reason being, we have a lot of greenhouses.
Yeah, that's right. The Monterey County government sort of made an interesting decision. We lost about $2 billion of our economy with the loss of cut flower industry in Monterey County after the South American Free Trade Agreements in the late 80s, early 90s.
Just a sec. There's a wonderful irony there. There's a huge irony there. Because...
Well, that's what... Yep.
Because... Go ahead and tell us about that irony.
Well, we're just replacing with a new flower.
Yes. So to me, the irony was that we gave cut flower industry to Colombia to get rid of its drug business so the people down there wouldn't be growing cocaine or whatever, right? And now we're growing drugs here in Salinas. It just seemed like a little irony, I guess.
Well, that's a funny. I'd not thought about that. And It's an interesting observation for sure.
So the reason then that Salinas, California is such a focal point of cannabis production is because of the number and scope of the greenhouse infrastructure it has and the proximity to a great big huge marketplace, that being San Francisco Bay Area.
Well, if I can expand on that, it's a set of factors. The fact that the county decided that it was going to allow for cannabis cultivation in Monterey County indoors as well as where existed greenhouses is a major piece of that. But it's also because, you know, Monterey sits between two massive population centers that are consuming areas, and that's the Los Angeles Basin a little further away and the San Francisco Basin, which is closer. Its other advantage is it's right on the 101.
Yep.
So when you think about the black markets from which we're emerging, those centered in areas where there was it would be difficult for the police to law enforcement, to find them.
We're going to have to take a quick break, Gavin. But when we come back, we'll catch you and your pooch on the food chain.
Okay, sounds good.
Folks, stay tuned. We will be right back with Gavin Kogan, who is with Grupo Flora of Salinas, California, and you.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. I did push the right buttons, finally. And we are back on the air with Gavin Kogan, who Grupo Flora in Salinas, California. And Gavin, what exactly is Grupo Flora?
Grupo Flora is a company that is comprised of business units. And we really call them silos because each business unit occupies a different aspect of the wholesale supply chain for cannabis. And so when we talk about the Monterey County and its place in the emerging cannabis industry, we think of it as really the pipeline or the plumbing infrastructure for the emerging California cannabis industry.
And it is an emerging industry, is it not? I mean, how much change have you seen taken in, like, for example, in the last 3 years?
Well, it's massive policy change and cultural change. You know, we're going through a cultural evolution around this subject. We're moving from a ban and imprison culture to a tax and regulate culture around the subject of cannabis. And not everybody's on board, but the majority are. And so we're going through that shift right now. That's where I've seen most of the change. You know, in my opinion, and there are people who disagree with me, but I don't think there is a California cannabis industry. It's really very fractured, regional operators, and there is not a cohesive marketplace as people would think when you use the word industry. We just started using the word industry last year, you know, maybe the end of 2015 with the passage of the MCRSA, at least comfortably, because it's really coming out of the black market. And so it has a lot of challenges to it. How do we raise money for this industry? Banking, which is intertwined with the inability to raise money for this industry. Law enforcement. It's a big cultural change, and so there's a lot of massive changes, but they're comprised of tiny little changes. So it's really hard to track. But 3 years, there's been some massive moves that I've noticed in consumption, which is going to change the way cannabis looks for consumers. Particularly, ooh. I mean the rising sales of derivative or consumer products, which are produced with cannabis oils as opposed to the traditional flower that we think of when we think about cannabis. When I started in about 2011 representing folks in this industry in earnest, the cannabis products, packaged goods, constituted about less than 3% of the marketplace or the real estate on dispensary shelves. I mean, my God, today that's 40 to 45%. That's a massive hockey stick growth curve, and it shows you that consumers are looking at cannabis differently than they did in the past. They like products that have a different personality. And we have an exciting opportunity here to shape a new industry from scratch and a new consumer culture around what cannabis means from scratch.
And that's kind of what you're doing with your Grupo Flora, right? You've pretty much taken on the entire cannabis food chain from seeds to product.
That's exactly right. And that's our goal, is to try to showcase aspects throughout the whole supply chain. we have a lot of educating to do of regulators. You know, we're at this time right now where we have to persuade regulators that more carrot, less stick is appropriate, because there's something that I think it's important for people to understand, and that is, if we don't regulate this and we don't make it so that people come out, like small farmers, you know, can come out of the black market and participate in this, then we're just going to continue the proliferation of the black market. So it's a delicate balance with regulatory and fiscal policies that we have to abide by in order not to obtain the reverse of what we're trying to accomplish here.
Well, we have a caller. Dana is tuning in, wants to get some advice on cannabis startups. Dana, are you there?
I am here.
Go ahead.
Hi, Dana.
Hi, Gavin. First of all, just want to thank you for your work in the industry and your support, you know, of this plant that's never been proven to cause addiction. Nobody's ever OD'd on it. So I really want to thank you for supporting the entrepreneurs and, you know, all the people involved in beginning businesses. And my question is, what's your number one piece of advice to entrepreneurs or startups, you know, in this emerging industry?
Great question, Dana. Are you growing cannabis yourself, Dana?
I'm not. I actually, I'm a real estate broker. I specialize in cannabis property acquisitions, and
okay.
I do have a lot of investors and entrepreneurs reaching out to me to, you know, help connect them with each other. So
great question.
Thank you, Gavin.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that probably, so at this point in the industry, it's important to point out we're still advocates. First and foremost, we're advocates for this thing. And so I'd say probably the most important piece of advice I could give anyone is be excellent in every aspect of your presentation of what it is that you do. Meaning, at this time, we've got this weird situation where on shelves you'll have a Rice Krispie treat that's infused with cannabis that is, you know, covered or wrapped in saran wrap with a dot matrix printer on it, and right next to it is a highly engineered Kiva can of, terabytes, 5 milligram terabytes. It's highly engineered and product safe with tamper resistance. So we've got that whole spectrum from sort of schlocky mom and pop to, to highly engineered food goods. And across the whole supply chain, whether you're doing a nursery, whether you're brokering property, whether you're making topicals, you know, I say really try to be, do the very, very best you can
to look
how
good.
The thing looks.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Can you two hold on till after the break? Dana, can you hold on?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, we will be right back.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get two friends to do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money, and when they're through, they'll get two friends and do it too.
We can eat our way to economic security and personal freedom. It won't cost an extra dime, and it will be so easy, it will make you blush. All it takes is two numbers. One is two, the other is 2-2. Join us. Take the 2x2 pledge.
There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy, it'll make you blush. Pledge two local bucks each day. Get two others to pledge and play.
Take your 2x2 pledge at MetroFarm.com.
2x2. So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
So little time, but we're here saying it. Quick question for you, Dana. What do you tell your clients when you ask them, when they ask you where to put their money?
Well, basically, I try to find out exactly what their focus is on in the industry. Sometimes they're coming from a bit of experience in cannabis, and sometimes they're coming from no experience at all. So it just really depends on what they want to get involved in. Do they want to be a passive investor in a cultivation property? Do they want to be a passive investor in ancillary business that's, you know, mm-hmm. related to cannabis, such as CBD? And sometimes they've formed a team and they want to bring an entrepreneur who has a product that maybe needs expansion and growth. And so they're looking, you know, for advice on how to move forward and help that company succeed.
Great. Gavin, your company, Grupo Flora, has pretty much the whole spectrum of cannabis entrepreneurialism wrapped up in it. Could you kind of run through really quickly the different areas that you have under your umbrella there?
Yeah, and I Grupo Flora is kind of interesting because it's not like your typical Trumpwellian, you know, architecture where there's like top down, we own everything. That's not the strategy at all. It's the strategy of creating an ecosystem. And then we have people come in and invite that participate in that so that our partners, they own their businesses. It's not like we own everything. We're involved in everything, but the sense of ownership is really about creating a whole ecosystem where everybody can participate, and then we harvest across that. And so what it is that we have in this ecosystem is nurseries that create clones that turn into tweens, smaller teenage plants, and then we put them into bloom rooms where we cultivate them, and that's both indoors as well as in these greenhouses. And then the flower will be harvested, the bud, and that can be taken directly to dispensaries. The byproduct, the trim, is used for extraction processes, and some of the smaller buds is used in extraction processes to create derivative oil that is then taken to our process lab where it's further refined as a different product, whether it's bulk oil, what we call crude at its rawest form, to something that's like a powder distillate. And those will be used in infused product or turned into concentrates like waxes and shatters, which are very popular right now in the marketplace. And so then we ultimately have a wholesale distribution team, and then some retail operations and dispensaries that are coming online. And what's interesting about Monterey in this area is that it's in the process of permitting. So while one aspect of our supply chain is permitted, the cultivation, other areas, and the retail are starting to come online right now. So it's not like Monterey's banging right now. It's still in the build-out mode, and there's millions of dollars of activity, lots of economic activity trying to build this industry out in Monterey at present.
Well, let me ask you all the big question then. Is now the time to get into the cannabis business?
I think that this is an opportune time. It's not too late by a long shot. It's an exciting time. There's things that we're really proud of. I'm particularly proud of the fact that we have so many women entrepreneurs. I think 36% of our entrepreneurs are women owned, versus maybe 18-22% traditional industries. So there's a lot of activity. And a lot of different products. You know, people compare this to wine in the wine industry, which has that economic power. But think about it, if you could consume
Gavin, wine. I've got to cut you off there because we're just ran out of time. But thank you so much, Gavin Kogan, Grupo Flora, Salinas, California. Les Israelo, thank you for
You're more than in. Welcome, Michael. Hopefully we'll do this again.
So what do you
shortly.
Think? Time to get into the business?
Absolutely. It's there, fantastic.
There it
and
is.
There's
thank
just a lot all. Of opportunities.
Thank you all for listening.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.